You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is Keith Law, and welcome to episode 37 of The Keith Law Show. My guest today is going to be Sarah Langs from Major League Baseball. She and I used to work together at ESPN. We actually did a few podcast episodes together on the old Baseball Tonight Show. Before I get to that, so my top 40 free agents, my ranking of the top 40 free agents with capsules on each of them is now up for subscribers to The Athletic. Please check that out. And that is going to be the main topic of my conversation with Sarah today. Also, just a couple other quick things. If you're listening to this podcast, but you haven't subscribed yet, you can subscribe through The Athletic app or on iTunes, Amazon, Spotify, Stitcher, lots of places. If you do subscribe somewhere that lets you leave a rating and a review, such as iTunes, please do so. Certainly appreciate it. I'm mostly 5-star reviews on iTunes, and that, of course, makes me very, very happy. Also, as we head into the holidays, I must keep plugging my books. I have two books out. The one that came out this year, The Inside Game, Bad Calls, Strange Moves, and What Baseball Behavior Teaches Us About Ourselves, is now out in hardcover. Smart Baseball came out 2017. It is now out in paperback. I hear they make great gifts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Now it is my great pleasure to be joined by my old friend, Sarah Langs. Sarah and I used to work together at ESPN. She is now at MLB. You can follow her at S Langs on Sports. So it reads out as Slangs on Sports. She's now a reporter and researcher for Major League Baseball. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was great to hear from you. And I remember you used to fill in on BBTN podcasts sometimes when Buster would go on vacation. We'd have some really great chats. So really excited to do it again.
Yes, hopefully we can recreate the magic. So our main topic today is free agency this winter, which obviously the guy who was going to be the big free agent, Mookie Betts, not on the market. But my take is that this is actually still a pretty good free agent class up top. There are a lot of potential stars, and if you're a contender looking for an impact player, I think there are some pretty good candidates out there. What's your general sense of what the free agent class is like?
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, you know, obviously Mookie changed this entirely, and we don't know exactly what it's going to look like for a number of different reasons. But I would say, I mean, maybe 9-10 is about where it cuts off. And after that, I see those players as a little bit different in terms of how much you could really expect them to impact your team, whether you think that signing one of those players might, you know, significantly change your World Series odds. But I do think they're really good players here. And in a lot of ways, we're going to get to give them a lot more credit than some of them have gotten in the past, because we're not going to be talking about Mookie, which I really like.
Yes, that makes a ton of sense. It does seem like a pretty good outfield class. The guy I had number one on my rankings was George Springer. So actually, let me first throw it open to you too. Do you agree? Would you have somebody else as your top ranked free agent this winter? And why, obviously?
Yeah, I think I would have him number one. You know, I thought about it when you sent me your list, and I wanted to make an argument for Real Muto potentially number one. And I think there's something to be said for the fact that you have a really good defensive and offensive catcher. You don't get that much. We know that right now. The only guy, at least, who's really proven himself, you know, Will Smith may get there eventually, but the only other guy right now is really Yasmani Grandal. And I think that that's really valuable. But if you look at what Springer has done, and if you look at potential pitfalls, what could go wrong if you're trying to figure out why he might not be worth a contract, it's really hard to come up with those. And I think that that just puts him a little bit ahead, whereas, you know, Real Muto is really, really good for what he does, but that Springer offensive output, everything else is just, you know, first class.
My main concern with Real Muto, because I sort of win it, if you just ask me to do it blind and don't go through the stats, just start ranking them, I almost certainly would have had Real Muto first for the reasons you just outlined. And then the more I looked at it, one, I was just surprised you. Springer's just been better than I realized. He gets overshadowed by other players there. But on a lot of other teams, we would be talking about him as the offensive centerpiece. But also then I started thinking, if I'm in a GM's chair, and obviously I didn't do that job, but I sat near the GM's chair. How about that? Thinking about, you're asking me to probably give more years and more money than I'm comfortable to any of these free agents. But that's just how free agency works. Well, who am I going to bet on, say it's a five-year deal, and it could be longer, but who am I going to bet on giving me the games and the at-bats and the reps that I'm expecting from the player? Real Muto's a catcher. They just get hurt. They break down. We start moving them off the position, or we try to play them a little bit less. Now, it may work out because hopefully there'll be a DH in the National League pretty soon anyway, and maybe he ends up, you know, catching 100 games a year and then 40 or 50 as a DH. But with Springer, I felt more confident saying, hey, you give him 5 years, you got a good chance to get, I don't know, 720-something or more games out of him. Barring some catastrophic injury, you're going to get more at-bats, more reps, just more playing time out of him. And I felt like that's probably an underrated criterion, because if you're a GM, you're thinking confidence. What's my confidence that I'm going to get the production? I personally would feel more confident getting it from an outfielder who's got a pretty good track record of durability than a catcher who, by the way, also has a pretty good track record of durability.
Yeah, I think that the aging profile for an outfielder is just still better. I mean, it's easier to stick him at DH if you absolutely get to that type of point where he is no longer what you want defensively. And I just think that the offense is better. I mean, JT Realmuto is really good, but, you know, he didn't have as great of a year offensively this year. You don't necessarily want that as your DH, you know? I mean, he's really good. I think I was the only one in our, we did the MLB Network top 10 at every position, and I think I had him two, and everyone else had Grandal, or everyone else had him one, and I had Grandal two, and I've been converted. I'm totally team Realmuto. But I don't know if that's the production you want from DH. So I think that that's where you get into that slippery slope with catchers. But I think it's a great free agent class to have two guys like that there. You know, we had Yasmani Grandal last offseason. Obviously, he had taken the bet on himself with the one-year deal with the Brewers. That paid off. But having those two options, if you're a team with a lot of money to spend that really just needs offensive production and maybe some help defensively in some way or another, is a really good spot to be in.
And I agree with you, by the way. Will Smith, I think, will be in there once he's old enough to shave.
Grandal, exactly. He just needs to prove himself a bit more.
Yep. Grandal got, so I had to look it up because I wanted to make sure I had it right. So it was 4 years, $73 million guaranteed. I feel like in a regular offseason, and I'll just say the caveat now so we don't have to say it 50 times, this is not a regular offseason. We have no idea if teams are going to try not to spend because of revenues. But in a regular offseason, I actually think Real Muto ends up beating that.
Yeah.
Not that he's substantially better than Grandal, but it's a year later. He's a little bit better than Grandal. And I think with Grandal, there were always these whispers that pitchers didn't like working with him, which I think was probably from earlier in his career. Whereas with Real Muto, you never hear that. Everyone who's worked with him, both organizations, nothing but great things to say about the person, the worker, the receiver, all of that stuff. I think he just goes in with a resume that's almost perfect, except for the reasons you outlined, that his 60-game season this year wasn't the year he probably wanted to have going into free agents.
And he's 2 years younger than Grandal, too.
Right, that's right.
I mean, I'm looking at the age season, so maybe it's a year and a half, but he is younger, and I do think that helps, especially when we're talking about catchers because of that aging and because of everything else. But I agree with Springer number one. I would have Springer number one, so definitely agree there.
Let's stick with outfielders for a moment, because obviously there's a lot of pitchers for us to talk about here too. But I thought the outfield class was actually is pretty good. Ozuna was the guy who surprised me. I think I'd ranked him like reasonably highly last winter. And then he, you know, obviously he looked really good down the stretch. He looked really good in the postseason. I'm thinking, wait, I don't want to overrate this guy. But actually a lot of his underlying data also supported, like, maybe he is actually just reaching a new level of performance now. The kind of thing where you worry, is he just going to free agency and it's a little fluky and someone's going to overpay? But now that we have this granular, more granular data on swings and batted balls, and you can maybe have a little more confidence that when a player improves his performance, that it's real or sustainable in a way that 5-10 years ago, we just didn't have the data to do that. And I feel like he might be a guy who makes a lot of money off of the short season, but also the fact that teams have better data to work with that might maybe make them buy into him a bit more.
Definitely. And one of the interesting things with him is that his underlying metrics with certain things, hard hit and, you know, expected batting average, expected slugging percentage, which are based on quality of contact, have always been pretty good, but he actually didn't hit to that level really until this year. So there was an interesting Fangraphs article a couple of years ago about the way that he hits the ball, where he kind of tops the ball, where even when he hits it really hard, he wasn't getting exactly the distance on any batted ball that he should be based on the contact he's making because of the exact way he's hitting it. And obviously these quality of contact and everything are supposed to account for those differences, but it was just so extreme for him that even though he was hitting the ball really hard, he wasn't getting the results he should have. But this year, whether it was a change, whether it was who even knows, whether he just got luckier with it or anything else, the what he did actually was borne out with what he should have done. So he had a 315 expected batting average, 638 expected slugging percentage. He had a 54% hard hit rate, which doesn't happen over 162 games, but it's pretty wild. More than half the batted balls he had were 95 plus. He was crushing the ball with a bunch of those Braves hitters. But I think that, you know, the outlook on him heading into free agency this time around is a lot better. And obviously the hot postseason helps, but the nice thing is that when you pull up his page, you actually look at what he did. These aren't even postseason numbers. Everything I said was what he did in the regular season. But it's interesting that you transition to him with outfielder, because to me, that's the question with him, right? I mean, he thrived in part because he was primarily DHing. And with the most recent reports being that we may not have a National League DH this coming year, we'll see what happens with that. I do think that changes his candidacy a decent amount, unless we're talking about an American League team. He was not good in the outfield when he did play this year. We know what he did last year in the outfield. He had been better 2017. I know he won a gold glove. Those aren't entirely metrics-based, obviously. But I think that that's like the thing working against him this time around, is not even that we know his defense isn't great, but that we don't know exactly what 2021 and even 2022 might look like in regards to whether his defense will matter.
Let me put you on the spot a little bit then. If you're a National League GM and your situation right now is, as you said, 2021, probably no DH. Let's say that 2021, we know there's no DH. Just work on that assumption. And then 2022, it's a maybe. Would you be disinclined? It's not that you'd ever walk away entirely, right? There's always a price at which you take a player like that. But would you be just disinclined and say, no, there are a couple of other outfielders we like on this market, we'll just focus on those guys instead and maybe stay on the outside of the race for Ozuna, figuring maybe an AL team pays him more, or an NL team that says, we don't care about defense, we just want the bat?
Yeah, it's so tough. I mean, you know, you have to really kind of do the cost benefit of how many runs might he cost you in the outfield, you know, not to be too harsh compared to what he might drive in. Now, with what he did offensively this year, I think he is worth the risk, but it was 60 games and we don't know what it'll look like over 162. And with that in mind, it might be worth waiting. But if you can get him for a multi-year deal and you're operating under that assumption that you will have a DH moving forward, maybe it's worth it for 1 year. You know, it also depends on your window. I mean, if you're not necessarily expecting to win next year, if you can have him on your roster so that you're going to be good in 2022 and he's going to be your starting DH, like that feels worth it to me. I know that's a very specific case, but, you know, there's a million scenarios.
The other outfielder I wanted to ask you about, Jackie Bradley Jr., I was aggressive. I ranked him 10th for a couple of reasons. One is I just think there's a lot of defensive value there, and I don't know that there's really another true long-term center fielder available in the free agent market. And also, I think there's probably a little more bat in there. I've seen Bradley going all the way back to his freshman summer on the Cape, and always found him a little perplexing because he wants to hit for power. It's like he wants to be more of a cleanup hitter type profile. And I don't think that's him. I think he's much better off as a guy who just puts the ball in play a lot, uses the whole field. He'll get his doubles. maybe he hits 15 home runs, but provides more value being more of a contact doubles hitter and then let the defense play. And I sort of ranked him up there as, hey, he's a little younger than some of these other free agents, and maybe there's some upside there that's not there with most of these other free agents. A lot of them are old enough that you're not thinking, or at least I'm not thinking, that there's untapped potential. It seems to me like he might be one of the guys who did have some of that. And that's why if I were a GM, even on a team that wasn't contending, maybe I'd be more interested in say, well, we can get that guy and maybe make him better. And either that makes us better or makes him more valuable to us down the road in a possible trade.
He really feels like a good project for a team that is pretty analytics, you know, focused, that can really zero in on how he's swinging, tell him to use the whole field like you're saying, and maybe stop trying to hit the ball hard. I mean, he did have a 50% hard hit rate in 2018 in 144 games, which I honestly don't remember. I mean, that's pretty high. I was checking like, wait, did he only play a couple of games that year? But he didn't. But it's interesting because he has this one aberrant season where he hit the ball really hard, but other than that, that's not really his game. So it almost feels like he's trying to be that hitter, which, you know, you can't fault anyone for being. I think everyone grows up on Little League fields wanting to be that big cleanup hitter, and maybe it's worked at times and not at other times. But I noticed how high you had him, and that's why I said, like, cut off is 9 or 10 in terms of the players who can really impact a World Series, because I was looking at him right there at 10 and sort of deciding whether I was including him in that. But I do think that he's one of these guys on the list that we've always seen the potential with, and it really does feel like that window hasn't closed. And like, if it's the right team and the right group of analytics people or anything else, that they can teach him how to be the best offensive player to go along with the stellar defense. And that defense, I think, is worth having around as long as he's not hitting in the 100s, you know?
Right.
As long as he's at least 225, hitting some doubles, maybe a couple of home runs here or there, I think that's worth having in today's game. With defense, I think, being at such a premium and really having the ability to impact the game, we've seen with the Rays. I know that they're, you know, losing in the World Series right now, but the entire story of that Astros series, it was mostly the infield, but it was the outfield too, of how they got to every ball. And Jackie Bradley Jr. is the type of player who helps you have that kind of defense. And that's so helpful at a time like this.
Absolutely. It's a good point you bring up, that there's a floor there where even if he doesn't hit like the way maybe you and I are saying, he has the potential to hit like that, but you're always going to get value out of his glove. And as I looked through this list, there weren't a ton of guys like that other than the shortstops. There were a few shortstops on here, and that's part of why I had Andrelton Simmons, despite the fact that he was not good offensively when he played this year. And he may not have been healthy. I think he had an ankle thing, and then he just chose to opt out. Yeah. But with Simmons, and this is a little bit true maybe with Didi Gregorius, a couple of these other middle infielders here, Jose Iglesias, if nothing else, you're getting the glove. You're getting the glove for the next couple of years. And given what you do too, I especially wanted your take on that. I've always operated from maybe more of a scouting perspective, in that defense is the one thing that it's going to stay. If you're a good defensive player, you're going to stay a good defensive player until age eventually catches up with you. Do we still think that's true? Is that a good justification for having Andrelton Simmons 13th on my free agent rankings, despite the fact that he doesn't really give you all that much at the plate, or at least hasn't the last year or so?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question, because I think I subconsciously operate under that as well. Like, we always think about Andrelton Simmons and we just think about his defense. And we see him play when he is healthy, and we see how much that can impact the game. But I do think that with the way that we evaluate defense now, and how much of it can sometimes be based on things like range, that does feel like something that does go away as you age, you know? So, I mean, if we look at, you know, Simmons, it's hard because his numbers have gone down because he hasn't been playing. So these are counting stats, not rate stats. So it's hard to know exactly. I mean, there are other rate stats, but I'm thinking of outs above average, defensive runs saved. He's not going to have as many because he simply isn't playing as much. But I do think that those guys are really valuable with defense. I just think defense is, you know, when we watch on TV, I think people start to really realize, or in person, if you've been lucky enough to be in the game this year, you know, I think that people notice it like in bits and pieces when a play really impacts the game. But the most valuable part of defense is when you don't even notice it, and it really is still changing the game, changing run expectancy, everything else like that. And I think that, you know, front offices, especially in an offseason like this, would be, I think, very smart to value that. Because if you can get a guy like that and be preventing runs, that's just going to help you so much. I mean, everyone scores so many runs this year. You know, there are a million home runs. a great defensive shortstop isn't going to change the home runs, but it could change a single to a double. It could change, you know, a hard hit ball up the middle becoming an out. And I think that, you know, any other way that you can be preventing runs is really important.
I'm glad you brought that up too, just as a tangent, but Christian Pache got a little time in the playoffs for Atlanta. And it seemed like people who maybe hadn't seen him before, maybe hadn't read what, you know, folks like me or Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo had written, they're sort of appreciating more, especially when they were at the games. It's like, whoa, this kid's really good. He makes it look really easy. And it's like, he doesn't make the highlight plays. People were comparing him to Andrew Jones in that regard. It's like, no, he's there. You look up and then you look down and he's already under it. And I think that's an example of the type of player you're talking about, that your metric, the metrics you guys are working with over at MLB, they may reflect that stuff. And that means what teams have, that'll reflect that stuff. But public defensive metrics may miss some of it. And the average fan, even a fan who's pretty into watching games, may not necessarily see that because those plays just don't stand out in our memory, even though, to your point, they're still quite valuable.
Yeah, I mean, not to further on the tangent, but Cody Bellinger made a catch in Game 5 of the World Series last week to end the eighth inning, where if you just watched it, it didn't necessarily feel like, oh, that's a highlight reel catch. He went a decent way. You could tell he was running pretty fast, but it wasn't, you wouldn't necessarily pick it out for your web gems or anything else like that. But if you look at the metrics, it was a 45% catch probability, which means less than half the time it's going to be caught. And he was running with almost elite sprint speed. He had to cover a ton of ground. He didn't have very much time to do it. And that kind of changed the game because it was a close game. If that ball gets past him, you have a runner on second base. It's entirely different. And the Dodgers were able to keep that close and then close it out in the ninth and go up 3-2. And those are kind of those silent defensive plays, you know, where you see that and the metrics are so great. And when I was looking at those and I was going to tweet them out, I'm like, are people going to respond, what catch? And I sort of expected that they might have said that. And I specified, I didn't just say that catch by Cody Bellinger. I said the one to end the eighth because I figured people might not have noticed it if you aren't necessarily looking for those little things. And obviously that's not infield defense, but there are similar equivalents. And I think that that's something that, as you're saying, front offices are attuned to. They are going to be aware of those kinds of plays, at least the ones that are, you know, working with the right metrics and everything else. And that's kind of what can make or break someone who might seem at first glance to be a, you know, borderline notable free agent, or however you want to word that.
Now let's turn our eyes to the pitching market. And to me, I actually would argue there are two elite starters on this market. I know some people might argue there's only one, and we can have that discussion. Trevor Bauer was third on my free agent rankings. He was the top-ranked starting pitcher. I did have Marcus Stroman right behind him. I feel like Stroman is getting a bit forgotten because he didn't pitch this year, and that doesn't make him a worse pitcher. He had an injury that he'd recovered from, but then he simply chose to opt out, as opposed to there are a lot of guys who were good pitchers who missed all or most of the season because they were actually hurt. That's a different category entirely. Maybe if we have a moment, we'll talk about some of those guys later. But to me, it's Bauer 1, Stroman 2, pretty close to him. And there's kind of a drop off. And I think if you're in the market for a starter who might really change your rotation, who's capable of adding a couple of wins to your total for the year, and I don't mean pitcher wins for listeners, I mean like actual team wins. That's kind of it. Anyone else, you might take a shot at someone like a James Paxton, but you're gambling. Whereas with Bauer and Stroman, I feel like you feel pretty confident you're getting at least a league average starter, with both guys bringing the potential for quite a bit more. What do you think about those guys? Or if you just want to talk about the pitching market as a whole, feel free.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, Bauer, everyone has pretty much, you know, he's probably going to win the Cy Young. And I think everyone is expecting him to be the top free agent pitcher on this market for sure. But I really liked how high up you had Stroman. And someone actually asked me the other day a question about him with, so he's never had a FIP above 4 in his entire career. So fielding independent pitching, obviously based on the defense behind you, which is particularly notable for him because he's a ground ball pitcher. And he's definitely at times been in a situation that maybe wasn't ideal for him in terms of the quality of infield defense behind him, which is probably the biggest thing for him in free agency. And I think he might be looking at that based on what I know of him being aware of analytics, but that'll be an interesting thing to follow. But so he had 100 innings and a sub-4 FIP in 5 seasons from 2014 to 19. Only outlier was 2015. He only threw 27 innings. It was still below 4, but we're not going to count that. That was when he was coming back from his knee injury. So the only pitchers with more such seasons in that span, so 6 of them, Verlander, Strasburg, Scherzer, Sale, DeGrom, Kershaw, Baumgartner. So in other words, if he just pitched the full season, exactly. And if he hadn't been hurt, you know, we can't know, but based on what the rate was, he would be on that list, right? Mm-hmm. These are the only guys to do that more. That's really elite company. I was a little surprised by that. I mean, I also thought that he was probably the number two starting pitcher on this market, mostly because I think everyone else is in a different class, but I wouldn't have necessarily even thought to put him so high before I looked this up for someone like last week. And I do think that it's important that he's hard to evaluate because we didn't see him this year. No fault of his whatsoever. This is, you know, 2020 and so many different things going on. But I think it's a good reminder that he is a really good pitcher, and it really is about pairing him with a defense that'll work for him.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. Just to sort of close on Bauer too, the one thing I think Bauer does bring over Stroman, and I think we could, you make an argument Bauer's provided higher highs, less consistency with the higher highs. But the biggest reason I had Bauer higher than Stroman is that Bauer has basically never been hurt. I think if I feel like I've seen comments from him where he said basically never, like not even as an amateur, has he suffered any kind of injury that would have prevented him from pitching. I think there's a ton of value in that. I mean, that's why the, the Josh Tomlins of the world, he's, you know, he's a different kind of pitcher, but Tomlin just never gets hurt. Right? So just having a guy where it's okay, if nothing else, he's going to take the ball 31, 32 times for us this year. There's value in that. There might be, I almost feel like that's something GMs might overvalue. And I'm thinking a little bit back to when I was in Toronto, but that sort of constant worry of, hey, we got 162 games. We need starters. We need to know we're going to have enough bulk innings and enough starts to get through the season. And Bauer is kind of a great combination of, he gives you that, but at the same time, he also gives you upside. And even Stroman can't quite match that. As much as I am a fan of Stroman's pitching and his free agency, his candidacy here, I think Bauer just gives you that extra level of confidence it's like floor. It's like what you were saying about Jackie Bradley Jr. It's kind of the same thing. Bauer's going to pitch. He's never missed a start. I think there's something to that, and GMs will pay for that.
Definitely. And I think that, you know, with the season he had this year and with the way we've come to expect strikeout pitching to go, I think he's someone who, if you didn't, you know, watch his games very closely, you might figure that he averages like 97 on his fastball. Mm-hmm. I think that the way he pitches, not looking at the actual velo on the bug, sort of indicates that. Obviously, for him, it's much more about spin rate, but I think that a lot of people might expect that he throws really hard and then would expect that to be the injury thing that's looming over him, even though he hasn't been injured in the past. But he only averaged 93.5 on his fastball because for him, it is all about spin rate on that four-seamer. Yep. And that makes him even more valuable because it's not like he has never been hurt, but he's doing something that we know usually hurts guys.
Right. Anyone on this free agent, on my list or even off of my list, who you like, you think is particularly interesting, I'll just throw, you know, I put Chris Archer on the end of the list, even though he missed the season with injury, but I feel like stuff is so good. He's never reached his potential. He's the guy your pitching coach is saying, give me Chris Archer. I can fix him. Yeah. Okay, maybe they can't fix him, but everybody wants to try. And I admit it, I've seen Archer pitch a couple of times. He's really good. The stuff is really good. I look at him and say, someone can fix him, right? He's got to be better than this. Who jumps out at you as somebody you'd want to take a flyer at, even if it's a one-year deal, if you were sitting in a GM chair?
Let me first say that I agree with you on Archer, but it's really concerning that the two teams he's pitched for are two of the teams that are the best at like pitcher whispering, right? He was with the Rays and he was really good, yes, and then he wasn't. And then he got traded and he went to the Pirates. And obviously we know the Pirates have rebuilt a number of pitchers in the last, I guess it's probably 15 years now. So maybe it's not really a trend, but that's what concerns me there because I agree. He's one of these potential guys, you know, in a different way because of a different position, but with Jackie Bradley Jr. just being right around the same age, these guys who we keep expecting to break through. And we're on teams that were good right around the same time. But I think if I were to pick someone, I don't know. I have so many. The Yasmani Grandal one-year bet on himself just gave me so much hope for so many players. Like, I loved seeing that. I loved how that happened for him with the Brewers that year. And that just gives me so much hope that, like, any guy could do this. I don't know if that's fair. I mean, I'm going to always have belief in people, so I'm going to hope that it is. But, you know, I look at all of these names and I see guys who have, you know, had their issues, but then also have, you know, been good at other times. I mean, part of me says maybe a Robbie Ray. I mean, I think he's also on the list of guys who we've seen some potential with at various times, but, you know, we've also seen so many issues. I mean, we thought that he was going to be the guy who was traded at the deadline last year when it was actually Zach Greinke, and everyone had all of the reasons that Robbie Ray was really, really good. And that's not what came to pass in either way. He really wasn't that great. And also, he didn't end up being traded. Zach Greinke was, but I feel like, you know, he's a starter who could eat some innings for you and who you could potentially, you know, bring something out of.
Yeah. He jumped out at me as someone where obviously he's not going to get a lot of multi-year offers. He's not going to get paid what you thought because Ray, with Arizona, he walked a man an inning, I think it was. I'm going off memory here. And then he was better with Toronto, but not actually good. And yet, he's been much better than that in the past. Yeah. And I don't know, you know, this is one of those where if you're with Arizona, you probably have a better idea of what exactly went wrong. And maybe some other team talks to one of his coaches from Arizona, talks to a former teammate or has some of that insight. I mean, I feel like if you're a GM there, that's a guy you've circled, said, this guy used to be really good. Would have cost us two prospects to get him at one point. Now we could probably get him on a 1 year, one of those bet on yourself type of deals. And that I'd be targeting him and trying to get more information. I think you're right. I think this is the good winter to say, I'll take the 1 year deal to bet on myself. Yeah. Maybe because of what I was just saying at the top two, we don't know. Teams may just say we're not spending because we're still in the middle of a pandemic. We don't know how many fans we'll get in stadiums next year. I don't even know what's going to happen with minor league baseball, but I looked at this list and thought there's a lot of guys here who I might take on a 1 year deal to see where they go. And those players might want to do that. Taiwan Walker was someone else who jumped out at me like that. He looked really good in a tiny sample. Are people really going to give him multiple years off of that? I don't know. Maybe Mike Minor does that to try to get back to where he was. You know, a year or so ago, he looked like a potential Cy Young winner, or at least somebody who'd be on your ballot. He's probably better than that. And I feel like maybe this is a good winter to try just what you're suggesting, which would be interesting. Maybe not great from like a pro union perspective, but interesting from a player's betting on themselves. And I'm going to come out 2021 and go get that 4 year deal like Grandal did.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, depending on, and obviously, you know, I've never been in one of these situations and none of us have of being offered such a thing, but you know, there's obviously something to be said for, you know, if you get offered any sort of multi-year deal, just going for it, given all of that uncertainty that you just mentioned. Another guy that jumps out to me, but he's an injury bug and I don't know, is I just keep Jake Odorizzi was really good for like what, a 2 month span for the Twins last year in 2019, where I think I wrote at least one Statcast article about him and I think I covered a couple of his games, like, and I was so in on that. And of course this year he was hurt for most of the time. When he did pitch, it was not great. And you know, I feel like there's potential there. You know, I you know better than I at what point, you know, 1 or 2 years of really good is no longer potential that's still there and is more, hey, those were the 2 years when he was good and we're past that now. Obviously, it's hard to figure out exactly where to draw that line, but he's a name that jumps out to me where I see that and I say, you know, if he could do what he did in the summer of 2019 for the Twins last year, that could be really helpful to any team in a pennant chase.
Sure. There's one other guy I realized was just looking back at my list here that I wanted to ask you about because I have such a hard time with him. DJ LeMahieu was seventh on my free agent rankings. Obviously, since he came to the Yankees, he's been ridiculously productive. He always looked like a bit of a Coors Field creation to me. Then he goes to the Yankees, he becomes a completely different hitter. He's hitting for more power with the Yankees, taking advantage of their stadium, than he ever did with the Rockies, where he was playing a mile above sea level. And I just don't know. Like, I think if you look at his stats, you'd say I was underrating him on these rankings. But I look at him as a player where, all right, you know, maybe his Yankee Stadium is for him the way Coors Field is for a lot of other players. And if you take him out of that, he'll still be a good player, but he's not going to be this all-star showing up on MVP ballots because he'll lose the power, all the power he's made such use of that short right field fence in Yankee Stadium. He's not going to get that if he goes somewhere else. So where do you come down on the type of player you think he'd be in the next couple of years?
Yeah, it's so hard to judge. I mean, I agreed with where you had him because even if only anything else, age, I mean, he's 32.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing with him is that he's kind of already had like two separate peaks in his career. Right, winning the batting title with the Rockies, and sort of figuring, okay, this is the player he is. He's not going to hit 350 whatever every year, but he's going to have won this one batting title and be a good Coors Field hitter. And then he came to the Yankees, and as you said, he's been totally different. But, I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. He's hit the ball harder in the last 2 years than he did in pretty much any other season in his career under StatCast. So that's not just the stadium. I mean, that's, you know, happening right in front of home plate when he's actually making contact. So that gives you some sort of hope that regardless of what ballpark he might be in, he would still be making that kind of contact. But, you know, he hits the home runs, but I think that the most impressive thing he does is just getting on base so much and a lot of doubles and everything like that. And those are not necessarily going to be Yankee Stadium products. So I think he'll be good for wherever he goes. My concern is much more that, you know, how much longer can he be as durable as he was for them and has been for the most part in his career? And how much longer can he be crushing the ball the way he was the last 2 years?
My guest today has been the great Sarah Langs of Major League Baseball. She's a reporter and researcher there. You can find her and you should follow her on Twitter. She is at Slangs, S-L-A-N-G-S, on sports. Sarah, it's been so great to talk to you again.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
That's all for this week's show. As we head into the election, if you haven't voted, I certainly, and if you're in the United States at least, if you haven't voted, I hope you do so. It is a great privilege for all of us who live here and are of age to be able to exercise that right. And if you do choose to go out and vote in person, I actually voted by mail myself, please wear your mask. Stay safe, everyone. Take care.